Who Are You Indeed, the famous CSI theme. TV crime solving, one hair and bone fragment and molecule at a time. The pop culture magic of all these forensic detective TV shows go back to this guy.
But how do you know about them?
Elementary, my dear Watson. This man has been dead for at least 2 hours.
Sherlock Holmes, the original crime scene investigator, right? Whose sciency whodunit approach to crime was a revelation back in the late 1800s, in the days of Jack the Ripper and Queen Victoria. But he was just as much a part of pop culture as CSI is today. And yet, here's a real crime scene investigator who dreams of Sherlock every day.
Having his deductive powers really can help give you an idea of not only where to start, but where to go. He would get right over a piece of evidence and study it with his magnifying glass, which is still one of my favorite tools today. It's my magnifying glass. I go nowhere without it. Nowhere.
That's Karen Smith, a crime scene investigator featured in a new documentary about Sherlock Holmes. Kind of makes you wonder what kind of hat she wears or if she smokes a pipe. Kimberly Sue Moran has neither strange British hat nor a pipe, but she is a forensic archaeologist featured in this new PBS documentary, How Sherlock Changed the World. It airs tonight. For Moran, Mr. Holmes is still the standard, and the rest of us are all Watsons.
Yes, I mean, I think one of the most powerful things about Sherlock is we talk about him as if he were a real person. Clearly, he's a character from fiction, but we don't talk about his author. We talk about him, and that just is a testimony to how impactful he's been in our field of forensic science and criminal investigation.
Do you think that Arthur Conan Doyle sort of compiled a sense of science that was coming together at the time that these books were written, that embodied in the character of Sherlock Holmes is a set of converging sort of developments in science and investigation and in technology?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the late 1800s was really an exciting time to be alive in terms of forensic science. There were a lot of things that were happening. He was a student of Dr. Bell, who was a renowned pathologist. And so a lot of the medical insights that he's added to his stories were a direct result of his education under Dr. Bell. And then also there was a lot going on in terms of fingerprinting at this time. We have Galton, who's in the United Kingdom, who is looking into criminal profiling and trying to understand if you could look at a person and if you could measure certain features, if that would tell you if that person was predisposed to being a criminal. And in the course of that work, he started looking at fingerprints, and really fingerprinting just took off under him and under a few others that were operating at that time. And then also you have Edmond Leckard, who is in France, who created this exchange principle that we still use today about how whenever things come into contact, they leave a trace of that contact. And it was that theory that really caused all forensic science to come after it.
And pre-Sherlock, pre-all of these people that you're talking about, pre-a sort of scientific approach to criminal investigations, we really weren't that far from the, you know, dump people into water to see if they float and are a witch kind of era,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Basically, the only way that you could prove someone committed a crime was to either have an eyewitness or to get a confession out of that person. And yes, as you say, there were all different ways to find one or the other, to either find an eyewitness or to get a confession. So before we had this idea of physical evidence of traces and contact between victim and suspect, between suspect and environment, we really didn't have a lot to help us in solving cases.
You know, Sherlock Holmes in all of the books is absolutely convinced that there's a trail that can be found from point A to point B. Do you share that sense of confidence? I mean, you sound very enthusiastic, but could you match the confidence of Sherlock?
Well, yes. I mean, again, it goes back to this idea of exchange. Every contact leaves a trace. And not just the crime itself, but all of the events leading up to a crime being committed, whether it's having a motive or securing a weapon or having an accomplice or whatever it may be, there's going to be evidence of traces of contact. The tough part is for the investigators to actually find those traces. There will always be evidence. There will always be evidence, but someone's got to find it and then preserve it in a way that it's actually useful. It can actually be taken to court.
You know, as you describe, Conan Doyle really is writing about the emergence of science as a way of solving problems in criminal investigations. There are elements of science that are brought to bear here, though, that are very, very disturbing. I mean, while forensics was certainly a very exciting form of scientific inquiry regarding criminal investigations. Some of the psychological elements actually tended to categorize people in ways that were almost frightening.
Well, yes. I mean, Galton that I was speaking of earlier, essentially he was practicing eugenics. He was trying to link a psychological trait with a physical type. And that is kind of scary. And you know, that still happens to a certain extent. There have been some interesting studies with fingerprinting where they've looked at the pattern of fingerprints and they've decided that certain pattern types match up with certain ethnic groups. So if you're Caucasian, you tend to have arches. If you're African, you tend to have whorls. And then there are other studies that link IQ with fingerprints. So the more complex your fingerprint is, the lower your IQ. So if you marry up those two studies of whorls, which are quite complex, being linked to a certain people group and then also a lower IQ, you can have some very disturbing conclusions at the end of that.
Well, as a forensic archaeologist, you're in more of a safe zone where it's all based on real evidence and that sort of thing. I'm wondering if there are any crime scene investigators or criminal profilers or television shows about Law and Order that don't owe a debt to Sherlock Holmes on some level.
I really can't think of any. Really, Sherlock was the beginning of all the enthusiasm. You know, we talk about the CSI effect a lot and the positives and the negatives of the CSI effect. But Sherlock really was the beginning of that, of getting people interested in using science, getting people interested in solving the crime, in investigating. And all of that has just spun out of Sherlock.
Do you think he would, you know, be comfortable in the television shows of today as a crime scene investigator? What technique, what technology would particularly excite him?
Well, I think just seeing the new BBC version of Sherlock shows that he's very comfortable in the 21st century. It works out quite well. I mean, the thing that one could question is whether Sherlock would actually stand up in court today. So one of the things that Conan Doyle never shows in his stories is that evidence that Sherlock finds solving the crime, he never actually shows it getting to the courtroom and whether it actually holds up under scrutiny. And some of the techniques that Sherlock uses, and even some of the techniques that we use today, have a tough time when it actually has to come into a courtroom scenario.
And he would find some of Robert Downey Jr.'s sort of martial arts antics rather ludicrous, wouldn't you think?
Probably just a bit, yeah.
Entertaining, but ludicrous. But after all, the fellow was completely a figment of Arthur Conan Doyle's imagination, so we can make him what he will.
Yeah. And, you know, again, showing that he is still alive and well over 100 years later, that we're still being able to reinvent him and utilize elements of the story just shows what a powerful character he is.
Kimberly Sue Moran is a forensic archaeologist featured in How Sherlock Changed the World. It's a PBS film that premieres tonight. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
One more thought about trust where we began this hour. Does transparency help? Does seeing the inner workings of government help you to hold it accountable, help you to trust? Lisa?
I still trust institutions for the most part. I just think news agencies show too much of the legislative process to the point of everything looks bad. Congress now focuses on poll numbers because of this. Same with the White House.
Good point from Lisa in Florida. Thanks for that. You can reach us at 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.